Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cup. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that down. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggly.
Yeah, yeah, this is Cassidy the Hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw. And you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio. And I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
Hey, what it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
The Mechanics.
Yeah. I pull up on the scene with a pocket full of green, and my shooter got the strap with the beam. Payroll is the team, watch me hit him with the screen and shoot the shot at your bitch for the three. If there's money in this bitch, wave your hands in the air. Pop a bottle, have a drink with a player. Sucker duckin', duckin' suckers, I ain't fucking with these hustles. Catch me on the flight walking through customs with a mirror zone. Top hat, a collar shirt, bitch, I'm really grown. Bad kick, a couple kids and a couple homes. Rap shit, who fucking with me when I'm in my zone? Point them out, I'm really on. And I don't think with my Peter, a bitch, I don't need her. Flow so sick, it got a fever. And these niggas say they rich, but they don't own shit. When I see them on the gram, I don't believe them. Penthouse.
I'm stepping with my weapon. Top hat in my section, shining, big timing, money long. Sucker ducking, my real one, a blessing. Took a nail, learned my lesson. When I'm headed, I ain't stressing.
Yeah,
I've been long ago. Sucker ducking.
Designer lace shoes when I step up in the room. Two stepping on you niggas, no jewels. They say I was a fool, how I make a bitch choose. Play it cool before you end up on the news. I'm from Oakland, California, used to hustle on the corner, and I'm still chasing paper at the moment. Balenciaga runners, vacations for the summer, big time and little nigga, I'm a stunner. On some cool shit, smooth shit, I like to hang out with a cool bitch. Slim thick, cute face on some boss shit. Flawless, these niggas thought I really lost it. Watch this, I don't miss. If it ain't about paper, we don't need to conversate. What you mad for? Life's great. And you see me sucker ducking, sliding on the interstate. If it ain't about cake, I can't relate. Penthouse.
I'm a step up with my weapon. Top hat in my section. Shining, big timing. Money long. Sucker ducking, a real one. A blessing. Took a nail, learned my lesson. When I'm headed, I ain't stressing. I've been long ago. Sucker ducking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's the deal, man? This your man, King Eric, the Media Assassin, and we are now tuning in to episode 583 of the best hip-hop radio show on the web, Off the Cuff Radio. And this show is sponsored by Cocaine Buddy Boy Entertainment, Screwball Radio, Da Vinci Clothing. And the guest we have on the line tonight, we just played this dope record called Sucker Duckin', produced by The Mechanics. This dude right here been putting it down for the Oak Town, still keeping it fluid, still keeping it solid, and keeping the energy positive. Here to talk about any new projects he has in store, what he got going on for the fourth quarter, whatever it be tours, whatever it be mixtapes, albums, and to tell his story, what's all welcome, the man of the hour, Eddie Penthouse, to Off the Cuff Radio 583. What's the deal, bro?
Yo, yo, what's happening, my man? What's going on?
Hey, man, we chilling, man. We blessed to have you on, man. Big shout out to my man T-Max. He should be joining us shortly because, you know, we've been trying to get you on because, you know, our schedules has been, like, conflicting one another, you know what I mean? But we definitely happy to have you on for 583.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. You know what I'm saying? Salute y'all, man, for even inviting me to this situation. Thank y'all. I appreciate it.
Man, always, man. It's a pleasure, man, that we play that dope record called Sucker Duckin'. Big shout out to Paul Racks from The Mechanics. We had him on the show like a couple years back. Real solid guys. So for people that's already knowing about your movement and what you got going on, tell us what you got going on for what's approaching the fourth quarter.
What's approaching the fourth quarter right now? I got another single that's about to drop at the end of the month, of November. And then me and The Mechanics trying to drop our EP in December, next month. So, you know, if everything go well, that's what's going to happen. Single at the end of this month, and then the EP dropping in December. So, you know, I'm crossing my fingers and hoping everything work out like it's supposed to.
Now, you have any features on there?
Right now, you know, we did a lot of songs, man. We did a lot of work. So I got a lot of features. We just haven't picked the songs that we're going to put out first initially. So I couldn't tell you what's going to, you know, like what the feature's going to be as far as on our EP, the first EP yet. But once we figure out the songs and pick the songs out, you know what I mean, then I'll be able to, you know, promote the features as well as the album.
All right. And going into this album, man, how did this project differ from any of your other projects?
It's different because, you know, I took some time off. So, you know, being that I took the time off and it was a big space for me working on the album, it was almost kind of like brand new to me again. So it wasn't just like I was just in mode and just, you know what I mean, like been working on songs and projects or whatever. It was almost like me starting all over again. So it was a big difference. So I had to really figure out how I wanted to approach the album. How I wanted to approach this, my whole who I am, you know, coming back. So, yeah, it was a big difference, man. It was special too. At the same time as being different, you know what I mean.
And how long did the process take? Did it take like several months to get your feedback?
You know, they actually put me on the Resurrection 2 album that they did probably about almost a year and a half ago. And then once we did that song, there was like, you know, we talked about just doing a project. So it took me from that time, I would say maybe a couple months. Yeah, it took me, they start throwing me packs of beats. And it took me like a couple months to really just start getting back into, you know, working and work mode and creative mode. So, yeah, about a couple months.
Yeah, because sometimes you got to. It got to be something just, you know, to light that creative match, believe it or not, because it's easy to be uninspired based off how the game is moving, and sometimes it can make you, like, very disgruntled. So what keeps you motivated?
I mean, just life, just being here, being able to create. Like, music, I love music, you know what I mean? So just being able to create is going to keep me inspired, but one of the most important things or one of the main ingredients that kept me inspired now was just even working with The Mechanics. You know what I mean? Just seeing that we all started together and me taking the time off and then seeing them elevate to what they became to, right? you know, they could have really just, you know, turned their back and not rocked with me ever again or just whatever. But them wanting to collab with me again and do some new music was real motivating and inspiring, you know what I mean, to make me really just want to go hard and get back on my grind to, you know, to level up and us doing something brand new to bring to the people.
And what's special about those guys is they have a trademark sound, but none of their albums sound the same.
Yeah. Yeah. So my, and what's crazy that you say that, because mine is all the way, like, left field, like, totally different from anything that they done. And that's just me being that kind of person that always want my music to sound kind of different. So I went away. I kind of ran away from they sound, period, on what we've been working on. So it should be dope. I think people, I mean, you know, people that fuck with hip-hop and love real hip-hop, I think they gonna feel it. They gonna fuck with it.
Yes, sir, man. And I can tell by the sound is that it's heavily West Coast influenced. And tell us about what it was like growing up in the, what we consider the old Oakland. We talk about, like, the old Oakland.
Right. Hold on one sec. The old Oakland, man, was more about hustling and players and people trying to make money. You know what I mean? So that's what I grew up on. I grew up on, mm-hmm. on people hustling. You know what I'm saying? Like, now it's different. So we had like people that we looked up to because that's what it was. Everybody was on. I mean, you know how it was. I mean, just like anywhere else. You know what I'm saying? In the early 90s, late 80s. You know what I'm saying? Everybody was about making money. You know what I'm saying? Everybody was about making money, and that's what everybody loved to see. Everybody was intrigued by that. Like, you know what I'm saying? So that's what Oakland was about. You know what I'm saying? Was intrigued. I was intrigued by, you know, the bosses, man. You know, the chains, the cars. You know what I mean? How they lived, and then that was the old Oakland, just like anywhere else during those times.
And see, to put y'all onto something, man, Oakland inspired a lot, man, just based off how y'all hustle is, man, because y'all introduced the independence. Y'all was doing it in a way where y'all were, like, pressing your own records and selling them out the trunk of your cars or your book bags or whatever, and just hand over fist. We never seen nothing like that before, because see, out here,
not to cut you off, but you know why? Because those artists had to do that because wasn't no major labels and big labels coming to the Bay seeking out artists. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it was a time to where the artists had to do it on their own to be heard in the streets. And you know what I mean? And Too Short was one of the ones that really started that because, you know what I'm saying, he wanted his voice to be heard throughout the neighborhoods and the streets, right? So he took and made his own cassette tapes, right? And went to every hood in Oakland and made those dudes that was making money buy his tapes so he can be heard in the streets. And then every artist after that kind of followed that trend. You know what I mean? Because we didn't have, like, you know, you got to think, on the East Coast, you know what I mean? They had people in there that was in the East Coast that was, it's the Mecca, right? So you got everybody big is looking for those big artists in those neighborhoods. Even in LA had a good look, but the Bay never and still don't never had big name, big label people coming to look at artists in the Bay. So we had to get out the mud, or they had to get out the mud, you know what I mean, and keep that tradition going. So that's not really where it came from and what it is till today.
Yeah, because it was just like you were saying, none of these guys were knocking at the door. You ain't have like a Def Jam next door. You ain't have a Sony next door. You guys had to go outside and literally mingle with the people, mingle with the dealers, mingle with the hustlers, and build that organic base. And that's challenging within itself.
And that was our thing. Our record deal in the Bay was basically signing to the to the biggest dope killer. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was our deal. Like, you know, the nigga with the most money was signing the artist because that's all we had. That was our record deal. You know what I'm saying? Out here. Or, you know what I'm saying? And then, or you just was out in the corner selling your own music out the trunk. Period. Thousands of local artists, that's what they did. Before, it was before, you know how, like, you saw people bootlegging CDs and like, you know, that era that was during that time with the late 90s,
yeah.
early 2000s, like, that was happening in the Bay Area starting from the late 80s all the way up until that time. So we was already doing what the bootleggers was doing back in the 90s, you know what I'm saying, and back in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
We was already doing that. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, y'all was already ahead of the curve.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Now, going on to this stage here, you're looking at all this transpiring. What made you want to be like, man, what made you be like, I want to pick up a mic and pursue this as a career?
As of now or when I was younger?
When you was younger.
When I was younger, I was just influenced by music. I love music and didn't even know I love music until certain things started transpiring. Like when I started hearing certain, like, cause you know when we all young, we listen to rap music and know all the words. You know what I'm saying? Like you know when N.W.A. came out or when LL Cool J came out, like, or even Ron DMC, like, you knew all the words. And we all love the music, but when you get to a point to where music start making you think you can create, you feel like you can create music. You understand what I'm saying? Like, that don't get
right.
Like, everybody don't get that. Everybody don't get to where, oh, I think I can do this because it made me feel a certain way, right? So I think it had to be like, it was in the early 90s when like we had a ton of Oakland rappers that was just dominating the Bay Area rap scene at the time. You know, you had the Loonies, you had Bad Influence, you had the Delinquents, you had all these rappers, you had the whole Dangerous Crew, and those dudes really made me feel like I can do what they was doing. You know what I'm saying? They inspired me to really start being able to sit down and write rhymes. You know what I mean? So that's kind of where it started. Yeah.
Now, who were like your musical influences? Because, you know, as you take it on this musical journey, people got to, you know, observe whatever it be, peers or whatever it be, talent or whatever it be, legends. Like, who were some of your inspirations?
I would think early off, man, like when N.W.A. and Eazy-E like kicked off that gangster rap, it was like it inspired me so much because we live in that every day. What they talking about, like, we walking through our neighborhood,
right?
And what they talking about is really going on. The story that they writing is really a movie in my life, right? So you walking through the neighborhood and you see that, and then you hear somebody talking that same language. On a music level,
yeah,
that was like really, 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 really inspired me. And Eazy-E always was like, just the voice that he had, like it cut through me. You know what I mean? Like it really spoke out to me. You know what I'm saying? Just because it felt like he was I always been a short guy, a little nigga, so it felt like he was speaking for me just by his voice. You know what I'm saying? So
exactly.
Yeah. So I kind of like that. I think feel like Eazy, and then it moved on to, like, of course, Pac. I was always intrigued by Scarface. You know what I mean? But of course, I always love people like, you know, like the LLs and you know, when it comes to lyrics, and I loved Wu-Tang back in the day. You know, I was all over the place with it, but I just feel like hip hop in general influenced me to really, you know, get into what I was trying to do.
back, man, especially with the way the culture was moving at the time, because you had a flux of new talent coming out, like so many different styles.
And they was rapping their ass off, like they was lyrically, like people was really lyrically inclined at a high level, you know what I mean? So like it made you really want to do that, you know what I mean? And it wasn't even about and now people get into it because they see like the kids, like they showing their money, they showing their diamonds, they showing this and they showing that. Back then it wasn't even that. It was just the creative side of it, like what they was creating at the moment. Like we didn't see them like showing off money. You know, you had like the Slick Ricks and all that. They had all the chains, but I'm talking about like really it came from like what they was creating that made you want to be a creator. You know what I'm saying? Now it's different because people want to create now because they see what they see on the Instagram of the money, the cars or whatever they showing you. You know what I'm saying? But it wasn't it wasn't that when I was growing up. It was what they was creating that made me want to be a creator, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, because they were very imaginative. Like, you could tell even when Ice Cube was putting out Steady Mobbing, or not Steady Mobbing, but My Summer Vacation, you could visualize the storytelling. Him going across the Compton to St. Louis,
going
up short with the work.
Exactly. Yep.
Same thing with one of my all-time favorite storytelling joints in. This is very underrated because a lot of people don't really mention this track because they feel that he's a better producer than rapper, but DJ Quick, just like Compton, where he was going into different territories and the shit that they was exposed to was just like Compton. Like, we were thinking, like, Milwaukee and St. Louis, it was a bunch of hillbillies and shit. Quick came out there and he was like...
He was letting us know that it was gangsters everywhere in the United States.
Hey, hold on. I think I got my man T-Max on the line. What's good, homie?
What it do, man? Yeah. My apologies for being late and whatnot. Eddie, great to have you with us. You know, finally made it happen, man. What I missed so far? What I missed?
We just chopping it up, man. Not too heavy. We talking hip hop right now.
We were basically getting into his we talked about the new project he got with the Mechanics. That's gonna be some fire right there, because you know the Mechanics, they're like the Neptunes of the West Coast, so to speak. So he got a project coming out with them.
Yes, sir.
Eddie, obviously, you know, Penthouse is accurate for your high rise of rhyme excellence in terms of being at the top level of your game, putting on for the town, you know, with the pounds of skill. When you look at it of carrying on the distinguished tradition of what Oakland, you know, the whole Bay, Vallejo, San Francisco, all of it, man, what does that mean to you to just carry that flag for, you know, really, you know, following in the footsteps of all the greats that have come before you?
It means a lot, man. You know what I mean? Because that's where I come from. This is what I looked up to. This is what I always wanted to be. You know what I mean? I always wanted to be on top of the game and being able to rep my area, rep my region the best way I could possible, right? And just watching the greats before me, put that hard work in, put that grind, you know what I mean, lay the foundation, right? So I always felt that I can be the next dude after that to come up and be able to rep my area, you know, in a high capacity, you know what I mean? Like, I can be the guy that can do it and run with it to where everybody else across the United States of America will be able to understand what I'm doing. And it'd be for where I'm for my region and in the Bay Area.
Now, one thing about it, and we love y'all in the Bay so much. We love California so much. You all out there in the Golden State have been so golden and so generous in all of the support you all have shown us. When you look at, you know, the guard of like E-40, of course, Spice One, shout out to Richie Rich. He's been on our show as well. You know, CMG mm-hmm. from Conscious Daughters. And when you look at the new guys coming in the game, like Jay Stylin, Lil Blood, Cookie Money, Filthy Rich, you know, how do you feel about, you know, the fact that there, well, we've always said there's no hustle like the Bay Area, especially out of nowhere.
Right. Yeah, we talked about that earlier.
Right.
We talked about that earlier, man.
Yeah.
They put some hustle behind the muscle.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say just to talk about that. Like you say, like, I respect all their hustle. You know what I mean? I respect the Jay Stylin hustles, the Filthy Cookie Money's. Like, I seen and I saw where they came from. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I seen when they was running around just like anybody else, trying to make it with big jeans on and long T-shirts, you know, selling their own CDs, you know what I mean, trying to get on to become who they are now. It's just all a grind and all a consistent hustle and just never quitting and never stopping. To see them now is just, you know, I love it. It's nothing. I just love it.
Yeah. And also, too, I mean, Too Short, of course, is widely recognized as the grandfather of it all. From him starting, of course, you had that first iteration of the greats, you know, the Mount Rushmore, the first wave with him, Mac Dre, you know, E-40, you know, say Richie Rich, of course, the Bay Area in general. That's considered like the first, the founding godfathers of it. When you look at Oakland, it is historically rooted in the streets in terms of what it's known as, in terms of being real. What does it mean to be able to be in the streets and be able to transition into something that you get to tell your story in a capacity of experiences you've seen, and how you all rap to get out of it? How do you feel about artists who are playing around in the streets while they should be playing, where they should be working to get out of the street?
I just think, you know, as far as the new generation and what they're going through now, I think that's what it's about. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I feel like their hype and their clout and their, Instagram fame or whatever the fame may be that they're getting off YouTube or anything that they're doing right now is kind of like connected to the streets. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like they have to be doing street music or talking street shit or even involving themselves in criminal activity to actually get notarized. Like, if you're not gangster, then you really not going, and the kids don't believe you, then you just won't be that guy. Now, if you go back to our time, which, you know what I mean, we can't really knock the younger cats for what they doing right now and what they talking about, because gangster rap started in, what, the 80s, right, with
mm-hmm.
NWA. And the shit that they talked about during that time, it kind of like damn near on the same level as what the kids doing right now. The only difference
right.
is when it came out back then, it was actually art. You understand what I'm saying? It's like somebody walking outside, seeing what's going on in their neighborhood and being able to write it down and make it sound like a movie, right? It's like art, right? They drawing a picture. They being Picasso. They drawing a picture to where it come out and you understand what's going on, right? The difference in today is you have to be doing what you drawing in your painting. You understand what I'm saying? For you to be considered who you are as the artist. See, back then you can rap your ass off and it was just like amazing. You know what I mean? Now you don't have to be that amazing. You have to be more street than your raps are. You understand what I'm saying? So
yeah,
I feel like that's Yeah, the credibility behind it. So me personally, I can't knock. I try not to knock the young dudes for what they're doing. I absolutely try to, you know, encourage and to, you know, just have that communication, you know what I mean, to where we can figure out how we can, like, balance it out. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's just me and how I feel, in my opinions.
Yeah, I think that's where we get it. I think that's where the content ain't never leave, because there's always sex, drugs, violence, and rock and roll. That's all, and, you know, urban street content, that's always been dominant, going back to, we can even go back to the 40s when cinema started, you know what I mean? So that's always been the topic. It's just a matter of how often the topic is being digested. So, you know, I think that's mm-hmm. where the real complaint is, where people don't have balance.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And I feel like right now, we have a real small balance. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the seesaw, my guy, is like, you know, all the negativity is sitting up high right now. And we kind of like damn near touching the ground on the seesaw. You know what I'm saying? Because we don't have the balance. To, like, you know, because you got to think back in the day, you know, we had a lot of conscious rap. You know what I mean? We had a lot of just pure hip-hop rappers. And then we had the gangster rap. So it was kind of like leveled out across the board. You know what I'm saying? Now, it's a little different. Like, everybody is going towards, drill music, kill music, or gangster music. You know what I'm saying? Which, I mean, I understand that everybody is hustling, you know, to make money and get out of their situations, but that's just what it is now, to me, my opinion.
Facts.
Yeah. And like you said, Eddie, we look at where hip-hop started at its origins, really being about reporting from the street culture of the black and brown, you know, brothers and sisters. And there was always going to be an evolution in terms of the subject matter and how it was delivered. But even then, at that time in the 80s, you know, of course, Schoolie D really in earnest starting gangster rap. Of course, Ice-T would follow. N.W.A.
yeah.
would make it famous. And there's so many other legends, DJ Quick, you know, Compton's Most Wanted, King T, so many others, especially from the West Coast, that were really bring it to the next level. People have complained about the messages, but it didn't make it any less pertinent and necessary, you know, and this is still going through a time where we're looking at it at that period where rap is still considered an underground phenomenon. It's on the fringe, you know, it's only a few that really, and now we're looking at it as being the most dominant, you know, genre in the world. But without issues, because somewhere along the way it became monetized as nothing more as a stock and trade of how we can quickly capitalize on it. Pretty much anybody who nowadays they feel has a certain aesthetic, a certain image, even if they can't really rap, if they bring a certain look, it gets eroded because it's not really... You and King know what I'm saying about how we even suspect some of these people now have been put in the game who did not necessarily come through the normal protocol of mixtapes and everything.
Right.
We would even call them agents, you know, like who are some of these rappers and how did they just get big out of nowhere making this shit music just coming out?
For sure. Most definitely. Yeah. And that's the thing right now. It's so easy to put whatever the fuck you want to put out. You know what I'm saying? So from the process of creating music to putting out music back in the day, right, to what it has turned into now, it's crazy. So that means it was harder to put out good quality creative music, right, that we made back in the day, or they made, not saying me, to now easier for people to put out this crazy ass content, right? It's easier for the kids to feed other kids the content that they putting out. It's a click of a button. You understand what I'm saying? And it's no holds bars. You know what I'm saying? It's no, nobody can control it, or, you know, not to say that, I mean, it's cool that the kids can hustle. I'm not knocking that. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
But it's harder. I mean, it's easier for them to put that whatever content that they want to put out. They can put out whatever the fuck they want to put out at just by the click of a button. You know what I mean? They can talk about
killing their
best friend. You know what I'm saying? And getting away with it just by the click of a button.
Yeah. And that's something I think we have to look at it from a perspective of where the youth are in terms of their hip-hop education. You know, King and myself were older in it, so our understanding of the music and culture is different in terms of where we were raised in. And we're not these two grumpy old men who hate all of the new shit. You know, yourself, Cookie Money, you know, Benny the Butcher, of course, even though they're in our age bracket. You know, we look at, of course, J. Cole, Kamaya representing Oakland as well. The she's coming into her own out there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the game in terms of the great music that is coming is fine. You know, the culture is very much thriving. But our concern is we are seeing a lot of young people coming in who are more concerned about getting famous rather than put out good music. You know, they don't know the elements of the culture in terms of the DJing, breaking, graffiti, you know, true and thing. And their whole thing is, how am I going to get out here and just get famous? And I'm like, it's more than fame. You know, look at how many rappers over the past 5 years who may have had a couple of songs, but they washed out because, you know, they didn't practice as Daniel signed that Mr. Miyagi was giving them a wax on, wax off to polish your technique. You feel me?
And that's a great point. Now, I don't know the actual statistic of how long in 2023 that hip-hop rap didn't have a number one album or a number one song, right? But this year was the longest year that hip hop didn't have either a number one album or a number one single, right? And it's because of that exact reason, right? They're not taking the time, right, to create music. They're taking the time to create famous and what's going to make them famous. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So
yes, sir.
That's what's going on now differently than what it was when what we accustomed to.
What motivates you when you go in the studio to, you know, really bring that, you know, to really represent for your town and how the vision that you want to put out there from your personal experiences?
It's a plethora of things, a couple of things. Like, first of all, I always want to be able to rep my area the best way possible and from the core of it, like where it really started from, right, where it come from. So the player aspect of it, the hustle aspect of it, the flyness of it. You know what I mean? Of where we really came from. And you got to also think, like, the Bay Area really was never a gang. We didn't allow gang banging. It was really just all about hustling, player, fly mentality, right? So then I go into myself, right, my inner self. So when I go into my inner self, I want to always be – I want to be me, right? I don't want to – put out a facade or put out energy that's not me, that I can't really had a conversation about. that we can't communicate about, right? So in detail, I always put in detail what I'm asking in my days now of emceeing or rapping. I always put in detail of what I'm actually doing now in life with all that other stuff that I said prior, right? So I keep that and also me being a family guy, you know what I'm saying? I got girls, I got wife, I got all that. So I put all that in the gumbo pot and I stir it up, you know what I mean? And what I deliver out of that is what I deliver out of that. But when I deliver that and I lay it down and I put it out, I'm going to make sure that I don't have to look back and say, man, like I shouldn't have said that or I shouldn't have did that. Or I'm not
Understood.
Oh, I think his call got dropped. Hopefully he's going to call back.
Man, look. We on Off the Cuff, live and direct with the one and only Eddie Penthouse representing Oaktown. Man, you know, definitely another great build as always. I mean, we're live and direct. Hit us at the number 1-516-531-9596. We are on.
Sir.
King,
yes, sir,
I mean,
man,
Young is
getting... Yeah, he's back on. Yeah, he's back on now. Yeah,
yeah,
he's
back on, man. Yeah, got dropped. I'm back.
It's all good. It's all good, bro. You good. Yeah, but thinking about it, like you said, Eddie, because like you said, this is the biggest thing from a street culture. You know, on Off the Cuff Radio, we try to, from everybody's region, try to give a history of the streets and how the politics work. And as you said, when we look at how the funk gets out there, gangs are not necessarily a thing in Oakland, more or less in the Bay Area, even though there are gangs, you know, Richmond, California, Sacramento. We know about, you know, Mozzie, shout out to him, you know, Muddy Boy Nell, you know, and Stockton, you know,
see
it,
that,
it,
all right, so listen.
Go ahead.
The Bay Area is not, and I'm no disrespect to anything, the Bay Area is Stockton nor Sacramento is the Bay Area.
Right.
Those cities are high intense gangbanging. Both of them.
Right.
Both of them are. They gangbang for sure. You know what I mean? But the Bay Area really don't. Well, now it's more gang. Now it is. Now it's more banging, right? But growing up, it wasn't. It was just basically turf. It was basically
neighborhood.
Exactly.
And I should have clarified that by Northern California. And that's my, that in terms of how Northern California funk gets down. Because Northern California was always, you know, when you got the Fresno Bulldogs and all that, you go, because you got mid-California going further up. And, you know, of course, Oakland, you know, and all specifically was always about, you know, really, like you said, neighborhoods, turf. Like when you had Felix Mitchell, the Alphamet Boys and all them. You know, I mean, we got a place.
It was more like buy your dope from us or it's gonna be a problem. That's what it was. You know what I'm saying? If you was in a certain neighborhood, you had to make sure you buy all your dope from the people that was running that neighborhood. If you went outside the neighborhood and bought from another neighborhood, then it got ugly for you. Or if they one neighborhood moved in on your territory, it was all based on money. You know what I'm saying? They was moving in to take over your territory because of the money. You know what I'm saying? But like it wasn't like gang banging. It was just all over money transactions. You know what I'm saying?
Right. One of the biggest bosses out there back in the day, Charles Cosby, you know, shout out to him, man. I mean, Charles was serious.
Yeah.
I mean, get it. Go ahead.
I know that guy personally. Like we got YouTube videos together back in the day, like maybe like 10, 15 years ago. I actually did a song for him back in the day, actually.
I mean, we got a lot of respect for Charles. You know, he, you know, watching him in Cocaine Cowboys too. You know, to watch his story, of course, the relationship he had with Griselda Blanco, and mind y'all, you know, because we're not gonna put that man business in terms of how much money he made. Yeah. But he made, you know, but he made a lot of it, and he, and most importantly, y'all, outside of being detained for a little bit, that man never spent one day in jail in terms of doing a long sentence. He made it out with his money. Not many people are gonna do it like he did.
And I think one of the reasons why, because he was kind of like incognito, like people didn't really know him like that. Like people didn't know. You got to think, once he did what he was doing, he wasn't really out where we were at. He wasn't really out in the bay like that, coming back and doing, you know what I mean? You know, like how
right.
most people would do. You know what I mean? Most people in that situation would have came back and would have showed people what they was doing. He didn't do that. So that's one of the main reasons why he didn't get caught in a situation where he, you know, where he could have been more ugly for him.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But, when you think about it, you know, and how he was moving back then, and he was heavy back then, and, you know, his story still resonates, and he's one of the guys who really, like, of course, you look at that old school era of all those guys. I mean, of course, we look at, you know, Hammer coming along in that time before he made music, you know, and a lot of people,
yeah.
you know, Hammer was putting off of the Bay, you know, of course, Oakland. You know, put out a lot of groups. You know, Oaktown 357 was working with a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, and people tried to kind of malign him. You know, and we kind of had to tell folks, like, you know, look, don't let the balloon pants, you know, dancing Hammer. Don't get it all fucked up with that guy. Like him and his brother Louis.
All them dudes, all that, you know, what they say was Entourage was like 30 to 40 people at a time on tour. You got to think
right.
most of them dudes was gangsters. You know what I'm saying? For real. Couldn't mess with him, couldn't fuck with him, man.
Yeah, they were thinking he was sweet. Cause these dudes are all dancing with the parachute pants and stuff. When they find out, it's a totally different energy.
Hey, I've been loving like the new stuff that's been surfacing, like with all the old heads that's been coming out, speaking their point of view of Hammer being like, don't get it twisted, man. Hammer had shit. Hammer had us like, whoa, shit, okay, we didn't know you was gangster, homie.
When you look at it from a perspective of the hoods out there, you know, in terms of, you know, the turfs that you roamed and, you know, were seeing stuff go down like Columbia Gardens, you know, Airport, Coliseum, Fruitvale, you know, Fitchburg, Produce and Waterfront. For a person who's never been to Oakland and coming there, what do they have to understand about the turf rules and how you interact with heads, especially going up in them spots?
Well, you know, Oakland. Well, right now is crazy. Right now is like it's the worst that I don't know. When I was a kid, maybe I was just in it. So, to me, it was more laid back when I was a little younger. Like, you can go anywhere, have fun, chill. Just don't go into certain neighborhoods, right? Just don't go into, like, the Sobrani Parks. From the Sobrani Parks to the Lower Bottoms to the, you know, certain parts of the 20s, the certain parts of the, you know, just certain areas that you knew not to go into. That's the whole thing. But you can go out and enjoy yourself. If you want to enjoy yourself, go to downtown, go to the club. You know, whatever it is you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's a little different, you know what I mean? Because back then, you know, everybody was making money. So everybody was just enjoying themselves, having fun, you know what I mean? But there were certain areas that, of course, you couldn't go to. But now it's a little different. So you can't really they robbing and taking shit. You can't even get off the airport and go to the gas station, man, and they break it in your car while you pumping gas, that kind of shit now. So it's a
damn
little different. Like, yeah, it ain't even, I don't even know if y'all heard the term of bipping. It's a, if you look it up, like, everybody in the Bay Area is talking about it right now. The whole Bay Area, it pretty much opened in San Francisco.
Yeah, I heard especially in San Francisco, like, one department store out there, yeah, they talking about, like, they was like, they're talking about it was a department store. I can't remember the name, but you're going to know it when I say it. It's like, that place has been around for years. They were talking about they had to close, but they were like San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah, Nordstrom, like the big mall, the main mall in San Francisco closed down.
I was just saying, but it's like the crime in San Francisco. Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, it's bad, bro. It's the worst I've seen it because it ain't, I would say it's the worst I've seen it because it ain't, it's not about people making money. It's about people, it's nothing but stealing and robbery, and it's, that's what it is. You know what I mean? They running in department stores, you know what I mean, taking all the clothes. They you can't park your car in certain areas because they breaking the windows, trying to, you know, they taking whatever you got in your car. Just all that in San Francisco and Oakland. Like, you can't, it's crazy, bro. It's crazy.
I mean, and, you know, it's something where, you know, it's definitely something when I tell people, you know, you really have to understand how it is for some people out there. The codes of hustling have been different, you know, how the music has changed, you know. And see, one seems to influence the other in terms of how behaviors come, which is why you always want to know exactly, keeping your ear to the street. You as a father, as a husband, what does it mean to you to be able to make that transition from music to coming home and being a family man and not letting, you know, the streets get the best of you in terms of, you know, trying to portray an image? You've already lived it, and some people who live it still try to live it. You did what you did, but you've evolved past that. What does it mean to be able to make that growth?
I think first and foremost, like, you know, me personally, once I started making a family and creating a family, my main objective was to get home to my family. I have to get home to my family. So I got to do everything in everything that I can do that I'm in control of, I'm going to do that to get home to my family, right? So if I have to stop doing X, Y, and Z because I got to be safe and make a home, I'm going to stop doing X, Y, and Z. You know what I'm saying? No matter what the case is. And sometimes people can't get over, they have to continue to be or portray or want to be respected in a way to where they can't let that go. You know what I mean? So sometimes people want to portray or want to be that guy, right? And then get killed, and then you can't come home to your family. So I made a vow with myself that now you got to think, I mean, not to get on a level like that, but, you know, I was kind of like the leader of my pack of being that guy, right? But once I started having kids, I made a vow to myself that I'm going to fall back so I can get home to my girls, so I can get home to my wife in a safe manner. Everything that I'm going to do is going to be smart. It's going to be strategic. I'm going to make sure that I'm safe to get back home. And that was my main thing, to get me to where I'm at now. Seriously.
And that's important. The transitions of, and this is the biggest thing that I think a lot of people really have to understand. Beef, when people get into it online, is something that it you know, fuckery is always going to sell. That's just what it is. Fuckery is funny at times until it turns fatal. And sometimes when you get into those type of situations, it can be accidental. It can be deliberate. But then that's when you have to understand exactly where you have a lot to lose, depending on what's going on. You've been in those turf wars, so you understand what it means to, number one, come back safe, and to understand when shit goes left, how to get in the right direction away from it. Thinking about that, when you see the music game, how have you avoided getting into conflicts with artists? And have you even had conflicts with artists to where maybe it even possibly spilled onto wax, or did you, you know, pretty much were able to kind of dead that before it even went there?
I always tried to dead it, but I had a long time ago, I had a little, you know, run-ins here and there to where it might have spilled over in wax, but wasn't nothing too serious. Where I had to, you know, worry about myself or, you know, whatever it came to, you know what I mean? But, you know, now it's, I would never let it get there, you know, because we're going to talk about it. You know what I mean? I'm going to make sure we, settle with as men, talk like men, talk like man to man. I'm not going to go online and go live. I'm not gonna go on Twitter and tweet about you or none of that. You know what I'm saying? We're gonna talk like men about it, and hopefully we can move on.
And that's important, man. I think it's a lot of times when we see how the culture is right now, and we've seen our share of shit. I think why it resonates so much with Tupac and Biggie is because that was the first time we actually heard stuff that actually was going to go to that next level. Even though back in the day there was plenty of rap rivals. We had, of course, MC Shan and KRS. We had LL and Kool Moe Dee. You know, barring lyrically on hip-hop, you know, has been something that's always been around because it's a competitive nature by sport. But Tupac and Big was something that was a little different. We're not going to go into the history of all that. It's been beaten to death already. But that was the time when we realized that when they both got killed, how this shit can escalate. You know, and we've seen many rappers since then tragically lost their lives because of either a misunderstanding or either they just got plain disrespectful with somebody and acted like that smoke wasn't going to give them some choking out. And being in journalism especially, we understand our responsibility of what it means to report the news but not be the news, to be an outlet for our guests to come on the show but to never be a platform for them to piss on somebody. These are very important to the cuff radio. King and myself, we have always prided ourselves on always being professionals, and we have always implored our young brothers and sisters in the game, be professional with this shit, man. If you're gonna make music, make fucking music. You know, stop.
Oh, yeah, straight up.
Don't get out there just trying to be like, well, fuck the ops. You know, fuck you, fuck your mama, fuck everybody, fuck your kids. I'm like, you realize you put in some negative energy out in the universe, and depending on what you say, the karma's going to come back faster than what you think, you know?
Yes, sir.
You're obviously very level-headed, definitely, you know, mellow, and always coherent in terms of making sure your thoughts are, you know, in a clear space. Who inspires you in the game, and who would you like to work with as your career goes on?
Oh, man, that's a tough one, man. I've been so dialed in on me just trying to get back to the level that I know I need to be at musically and where I stand. So it's kind of hard. But I look at it like, you know, I constantly want to work with Bay Area and West Coast artists that's at the top of their game. you know, mm-hmm. like the, you know, the people that's making like national hits, that's making national music. Of course, I never worked with E-40. I mean, we hung out. We know the same people. We never did a record. I've done a couple records with Too Short, so I already knocked that off my bucket list. And just like some more LA dudes, man, like the YGs, you know, them guys that's making hits down there. I think to, you know, just elevate and connect the Beta LA a little more, as far as on the making the hit kind of music, the national music, you know what I mean, that everybody can rock with, because we really don't have, like, as far as the Bay goes, we really don't have that Tiger, YG, just, you see, you know how them guys could just, them guys can just come out and make hits, like, you know what I mean? We still, I think, out here relying on the E-40s, the Too Shorts, the older guys, you know what I mean? And I feel like we need to, up here, as far as nationally, need to step our game up. So, yeah, just more guys like that, man, you know what I mean? Just the guys that's just on top of the game, man. I really can't pinpoint nobody just because I'm so locked in and doing what I'm trying to do right now. That's what I would say.
Shout out to Kenny Tweed and, of course, Rax and Mechanic. We had them on the show a couple of years ago. We love those guys. I mean, just to, you know, really see what they've done and how you've linked with them. Like King said, those are the Neptunes of the West Coast. I mean, you know, how important is it when artists come in to have somebody who really embraces them and is really willing to help them along, like those guys were with you?
Well, I don't know if you know the history behind us, but
tell us.
So I started in the group Hitters on the Payroll that was mm-hmm. created by Numbskull from the Loonies, right?
Okay.
So Eddie Projects was my first initial name, Eddie P. And then the P turned into Projects because Money B from Digital Underground named me Projects because I was wild, you know what I'm saying? I was a little wild dude, right? So Money B from Digital Underground named me that. So we was up under the Loonies, Digital Underground, which was, at that time, Digital Underground DJ was Dot, which a.k.a. now is Four Racks, right?
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah, so Four Racks was Digital Underground DJ. We was all up under the same umbrella. When we all kind of like branched out and started doing our own thing, right? Folk Dot was his original name, which is Folk Racks now. He did a whole album, two albums. Well, yeah, an album. He did our whole first Hitters on the Payroll album, right? And then he did him and Tweed. We hooked him and Tweed up after that. They wasn't even the Mechanics then. They did our whole second album. Then after that, me, Dot, and Tweed worked on my whole solo album before it came out. This album, we did this album in probably like 2002, 2003, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, that album never came out. So what I did was I started buying the songs from them that I laid with them, and then I started putting them out. And I started getting radio play out here in the Bay, just off the songs that I was doing with them and the albums that I was putting out, I was working. So we never, like, we never put out no material together. It was me being solo, which we know we should have back then when we was working on my solo album. I feel like that was one of, like, I had a couple of mistakes that I made in my early part of my career, and that was one
right.
of them. One of them was I didn't put out the album with the Mechanics and Eddie back in like 2003, 2004. It never came out, right? That was one of my mistakes. So fast forward to now, through all everything that I done went through and to the status that they're at now, right? Like, we all brothers. We all grew up together in the music industry together from the beginning, day one, to now. They're at their status. I really wasn't even in the game no more. I was just chilling, just doing regular life, you know what I'm saying? And then when Rax got sick, when he bounced back, he called me and was like, man, I had a dream about you, bro. Like we got to work. So once he said that and initiated that with me, we started working. And then everything after that been gold. So I'm rocking with it. You know what I'm saying? Like, we back family again. Like, we always been family, but we back close again like we were in the early 2000s. Like, it's like that. And I really appreciate the relationship with them, working with them, outside of working with them. Just the whole vibe is beautiful right now.
Man, you just schooled us, because I did not know that the history went that deep. Because we had Money B and Young Hump on the show some months ago.
Yeah.
You know, we had them on the show. Shout out to, you know, Young Hump and Money B carrying on the Digital Underground, you know, tradition and the legacy. And I did not know that Forax used to be their DJ. So, I mean, this comes full circle. My first introduction to the Mechanics was with Mozzie and Jay Stylin on the track Hit and Run. And that was going back to 2016. That was the first time, and they had already been the game for a minute, but that was the first time I had heard an actual track that they did. And I was like, whoa.
Right. Yeah.
But I fuck with Bay Area rap heavy, man. I mean, you know, Drew Down, I mean, shit, E-40 is one of my all time favorite MCs. Shit, man. I mean, you all, and we can't forget the ladies out there, man. I mean, just in terms of, there's just something about Bay Area. It's just, oh my God. I mean, ooh, I mean, San Fran and Oakland. I mean, Oakland just, especially Oakland, man. Y'all just got some bangers out there. Oh my goodness. What makes those women just so beautiful out there, man?
Man, I don't know, man. I don't know what it is.
Shout out to Nay. Shout out to Nay. We had her on the show some months back because she's from Oakland and Vallejo. But, oh, my goodness.
Okay.
I mean, you know, she, yeah, man. But it's like, you know, I got to thank some pretty hood bitches. And y'all got a lot of out there.
Yeah. That's dope.
Yeah, man. So moving on in the game, how would you like to continue on? The independent level, is that great for you, Eddie, or is it a situation where down the line you would like to be on with a major label?
I think I like the independent situation right now. That's working for me. I'd rather try to build my own leverage, you know, rebuild my whole everything, right? Because I'm going from, I don't know if y'all notice, I'm going from Eddie Project to Eddie Penthouse. So if you go to my Eddie Project page, I still run that day to day. Eddie Penthouse page on IG, I'm talking about, is like, it's growing kind of like on its own. But the Eddie Project, where I really come from, I run that every day. So I'm just trying to build everything back up from, because I haven't dropped an official album since 2011, right? So I took a lot of time off. So now that the Mechanics brought me back, right now it's just all about building my old fan base back, getting a new fan base, and you know, by doing that is like putting my feet on the ground and doing all the work myself. You know, so I feel like a major label right now wouldn't make sense. Maybe in the future, but I feel like if I got to that point to where I'm talking to a major label,
about some business because they want to rock with me on what I'm doing, I probably would still want to take all the money and run with it myself. You know what I'm saying? So that's just where I'm at, just being, you know, as grown as I am and you know, business, I don't want to say savvy, but just trying to be more of a businessman now. I probably will just still want to stay independent.
What is it like in terms of being able to do shows and having people come out and really support the movement?
You know, it's dope, man. You know, I'm still, you know, like I'm saying, I'm building. I'm still trying to build everything back, but that's dope. When I go out and I get support and people come out, you know, I don't care if it's, you know, 50 people to 250, you know what I mean? I don't care whoever come out to support me. That's dope, you know what I mean? And another thing that's dope is, you know, I still got the support of a lot of, you know, like people that's in cool positions, you know, from DJs to promoters to the mechanics to, you know, just different people that, you know, still they putting me back on stage with open arms, you know what I mean? So so I really appreciate everybody that's putting me back on stage with open arms, and just the support is always good. But like I say, I'm in building mode right now. I'm just building right now. You know, it's a grind, but you know, I'm up to it.
I mean, we're happy to be part of you, you know, in terms of that construction, in terms of being a block, in terms of you helping build that, you know, monument of magnificence. You know, that is something, you know, from the first time, you know, we connected on IG, man, it was like you were just one of the coolest niggas, man. And is there our experiences with California, especially, you know, Northern California niggas are too, you know, just, I mean, but everybody in Cali has always shown us so much love, man. I mean, so we wanted to be part of that in terms of helping you get there. When you think about the business aspect of it, in terms of taking your destiny into your own hands, doing what you have to do in terms of working, how important is it for artists to understand this business aspect in terms of getting out there, interacting with people, understanding that there are no free lunches and no quick fixes and no fast solutions, that this is a long, arduous process that takes planning, preparation, most importantly, a method and patience. What have you learned in that journey?
All of that, you know what I mean? All of the above, everything that you said. And another thing, most importantly, is staying consistent and not giving up. You know what I mean? So with all of that said that you said, right, those other two things that I said is key. You know what I mean? And you really have to dot your I's and cross your T's to make sure that you on point with your business. Because I made a lot of business mistakes younger that I regret right now. Because I'm looking at it like, damn, like I'm not even, you know, I'm not even seeing what I'm supposed to see of what's going on right now. You know what I mean? So always dot your I's and cross your T's and stand on your business. You know what I mean? Especially if you got motion, especially if you moving. You know what I mean? You don't want to, because a lot of the times, young artists, even me learning, you know, you feel like you're doing stuff for the opportunity, right, to get seen or to get known. But at the end of the day, the business side of it is more important than that. And sometimes we miss the ball on that because we thinking we're going to make this move just to be seen, just to be known, just to get more exposure. Right, but at the same time, you gotta have that business locked in on the back end, and that's gonna help you in the future. So that's how I look at the game.
What does it mean to have the support of local DJs and a lot of the local legends really push you along? You know, we hear horror stories of a lot of artists who say that, you know, they don't get the help. You know, people on the radio not fucking with them. It's you know, that they did it just they, because we got a saying. Shout out to Rusty Jux when we had him on the show some years back when he said this: nobody can stop you from doing what you want to do. And this is what we got to let our listeners know in terms of the term between hating and people not feeling you. Hating is when motherfuckers actually are trying to put shit together to stop you from doing what you're doing. People not feeling you is just when your shit ain't good.
Right.
But in your case, you got people that have really embraced you and helped you. What is that? But it's all about cooperation. What does that mean for an artist to know that their city and the instrumental and the people of consequence in that city are behind them to help them win? And what does that say for the culture?
I mean, that's huge for the culture. For any artist, you get the DJs, you get the promoters, you get everybody behind you to push you as an artist. The thing is what a lot of people don't understand is that the fans is what really make you. The people that reciprocate your music is what really make you, right? So you can have a DJ to break your record, but if that record is not it, it's just simply not it. Or if you send your music to a DJ and he don't play your music or he don't respond to your music, it's because that song is not it. You know what I mean? So I look at it as, if your song is not it, your song is not it. Of course, you know, it might be certain situations to where another artist might have a little more leverage than you, to where the DJs might gravitate to them a little bit more just because they got more leverage. And then I would say in that instant, then you have to gain more leverage, right? That means you have to be more consistent as an artist. You have to be more consistent at putting music out, great music, good music, not just bullshit, right? To gain more leverage, to gain more leverage to even the playing field. That's how I look at it. Even for me right now, I got DJs rocking with me. A lot of DJs in the Bay rocking with me, but not all the DJs that I really want to rock with me, right? Because they looking at me like, oh, he's coming back. Oh, he got a different name. Oh, he's older now. Oh, is he going to go back and hiding after this album or what he's going to do? So even for me, I know I have to put more work in to get all these other DJs that I want too. So that goes for any artist, right? You have to be consistent. Consistent meaning putting out great music, not just bullshit. You have to leverage yourself with that music, right? And just continue to work, because at the end of the day, something is going to catch, right? If you're putting out great music, something is going to catch to make the DJs gravitate towards you and what you're doing in your movement. It's easier said than done. I mean, it's that easy. You can do it just like that. And nowadays, you can.
Yeah, and what you said, Eddie, sticks out because you said older. King and myself, we've spoken on this show with so many of our guests over the years. And it hurts our heart because hip-hop rap music is the only genre that tries to euthanize legends, where we say, you know, well, we don't, but people will try to say, well, you know, such and such is too old. Why are they still doing it? I'm like, if they can still do it, let them do it.
If you go to any other genre of music, man, you go to rock and roll, you got old-ass white people still making records with the band. You know what I'm saying? You go to country music, you got old country artists. It's the hip-hop genre that specifies in age limits on when you can't rap no more, when you need to stop. You know what I'm saying? And it's crazy to me. I don't understand it.
And I get it. There's a certain aesthetic that resonates youth. We understand that. But by the same token, you know, Jay-Z's 53. You think Jay-Z still can't out-rap some of these dudes out here? E-40 is what, 55? And he's still killing it. Next time you talk to E-40, Eddie, tell E-40 we still mad at him because he ain't dropped the book. Tell him we need that book. He been starving us out with that slang book. We need it.
We need
that book. To see Griselda, to see those guys being older and still doing it, you know, to see Nas still doing it, you know, to see Ghostface, Method Man, Red Man.
That's the last show too.
Yeah. And they're still selling out shows. You know, it shows to me the levels of the Too Short, Uncle Short is still, Snoop Dogg is still doing it, putting on with the youngins. I mean, he did, you know, of course the joint he did with Compton AV, you know, of course the new joint he dropped with Doggy Style, you know, the rapper, you know, from San Bernardino. I mean, you know,
that goes to show you what them people talking about is a lie.
Yeah. I'm like, you going to tell me Uncle Snoop still ain't got flows? You going to tell me Too Short still ain't got a flow? You know, Cocaine, shout to the OG from Pomona. You know what I'm saying? Him and Big Hutch, you know, from Above the Law.
Man,
you know, it's like,
man, you see Sugar Free right now? He killing shit. Sugar Free killing
nigga,
shit right now.
Nigga, Sugar Free dropped one of the man, that Sugar Cane album is fucking cold, man. I'm like, that's the most pimped out wisdom. Shout out. We got Cocaine on the show. We've had him on twice, and, you know, one show we had Solo and another with his daughter. We're still trying to get Sugar Free on, you know, to finish it off. But, man, I mean, this is what a lot of the youngins don't understand. When you are that legendary, when you are that great, when you are that established, when you are that iconic, what does that mean? You know something about rapping, and you are able to attain and share wisdom and wit in the written skills. You know,
at a high level.
Yes, at a high level. Thank you, Eddie. At a high level. I mean, when you listen to some of the stuff that some of the older niggas be spitting and you think about it, I mean, it's like when I listen to E-40, some of the lyrically, that guy, in terms of his cadence, his triple time, I mean, his whole bar structure is unbelievable. You know, but the dude oozes outstanding in terms of how he drips with the dialogue, spitting superlatives. You know, that man is not a slouch on the couch. That man is up with the stuff and dropping gems like he rocked jewelry on the gleam with the bling and still doing his thing after all these years. He just, like you said, was consistent. He's a consummate professional and class and consistency. Method Man, Red Man, I've seen them perform. Those guys, and they still do it at a high level moving around. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Even watching New Edition, you know, when I was at their show last year in Norfolk, to see them doing it after 40 years and all the songs, Bobby was with them. I mean, they were doing each other's songs, doing backup vocals on each one, from BBD to Bobby to Ralph to Johnny. These are guys in their 50s, and they still rock it like they're 20s.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is... Youngins, take notes on, you know, the longevity of those careers of those legends, and also too how to perform. Eddie, how important is it for artists to understand how to put on a great stage show?
It's very important. I mean, because that can make or break your fan base, and it can gain or not gain fans for you. It's a part of the art form. You know, this is like you creating a creating the rap, or you writing the rap, you want to be able to create your stage presence and your stage show as well, just as well as you want to create songs. So it's all combined. It's all hip-hop. You know what I mean? It's all using your creative form, and that's how I look at it, most definitely.
Man, and that's something where when people come to a show, they want to be entertained and they want to feel an experience. As batshit crazy as he can be at times, and we've said our shit about him on this show, I've said it again, for all of his antics, Kanye West still puts on one of the best shows I have ever seen. That hey, man can put on the show.
Man, you know Kanye is a genius. He's a genius, man. We think he crazy, but you know most geniuses is crazy. So he know what the fuck he doing for sure.
Yeah, but that dude has a vision in terms of one thing I can say. When that man gets on the stage and does it, that dude does it.
Right.
You know, and that's important because you really want the crowd to feel what you're doing in terms of your art. When we look at how the music moves today in terms of artists, and we know that, you know, what you all do is a very intimate and essential part of your essence because it's an extension of who you are as a person and what gift you have to share with the world. Even though we always don't agree with him, because he does do a lot of fuckery at times, academics with how he's been getting lambasted in terms of what he – because sometimes he do get out of pocket and he needs to be checked. But there are times where, you know, he simply as a journalist is making an observation about what he thinks is not good. And, you know, a lot of artists got mad at him. I mean, it's like, I'm like, that man does have a platform and he was just stating an opinion. What do artists have? But you have some artists that take it personal when somebody doesn't like it and they talk about how they're going to do something to somebody.
You talking about Joe Budden, right?
Joe Budden, too.
Yeah, I know y'all talking about. I lost my car. My car had dropped for a bit.
Yeah, we were talking about academics, about what he had said about Gorilla Song. Yeah. I talked about how academics, too, and we were talking about referring to what he said about Gorilla Song really wasn't it. You know,
I can tell you, in my opinion, I'm thinking that the reason why there's a lot of sensitivity behind, well, some of these artists is that some of these artists knew what it took. They had to eat shit. They had to go do the grind. They had to go do being broke. And they looking at it like anybody that come with an opposition with a critique on their music is affecting their bottom line. So therefore, they're looking at it like, okay, you're affecting my bottom line. I don't care if regardless of it's true or not. The bottom line is me making a successful sale with this product. Now the product
that's true. That's true. But I'm gonna push back a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also, yeah, and not even push back. I'm gonna give you another look at it. Artists are sensitive to their baby, period, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when artists create, that's like a I don't care. I'm putting artists across the world. You know what I mean? Whether you're a painter or whatever you do, right? When you display that product to the world, they are regular people, right? So if you say, I don't like that, right? And then the work that they put into that, they have feelings. See, sometimes we disregard artists having feelings, right? They have feelings.
Right.
So they feel, they're emotional. So they feel a certain way about what a person said about their art that they created, right? Now, how they express their feelings is totally two different things, right? Some people are able to express themselves in a certain way. Other people can express themselves in other ways. So that's what happened in most cases. Those people, pretty much to make it simple, is their feelings are hurt because academics said something shitty about their product that they put out. You understand what I'm saying? And they feelings get into it, and then they express themselves on how they feel about their feelings. Because I can tell you as an artist, a lot of the times, even if I'm creating something and I let my wife hear it or anybody else and whatever, like close to me, and they say, that's okay. I'm going to have a deep feeling in the inside. Now, mind you, being a big artist, And then you have this one dude that you can't even really communicate with, right? And he really speaks down on your art that you created. You're going to feel a certain kind of way, and you're going to respond in a certain way. Now, as far as academic being disrespectful, then that's something different, because he can get disrespectful
right.
at times. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But
if I want to say
but
as well.
Yeah, but him critiquing or constructive criticism to any artist, right, it's just them being able to control their emotions and being able to express it, or not even, don't even engage in it, right? Just not even engage in it and let him say whatever he want to say. But most of the time, they be so affected off what he said about their art, they have to express themselves on what he said. In most cases, I think.
Yeah, and by the same token, you're right. That's why, you know, we want to preface that too with academics. He does get out of pocket at times because he does go below the belt. Because like you said,
now you're going personal now. Like you're attacking a man's integrity.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
what
sometimes that's one. It's like even with us on Off the Cuff. There are artists there are people we have spoken on the show when they did or said something that we didn't particularly like. One thing about it is that we are not a show that operates off of controversy or tabloids or talking down. We do have observations, we do have criticism, but we try our hardest to never be disrespectful and to never just be grimy with people. That's not what we do here. That's not what we will ever do. But as being part of the press, we have an opinion. And also, too, we feel that it is our duty, we know it is our duty, to be part of what we do is impartial, because we don't take sides on anything. We simply look at how we feel and what the temperature is outside with everybody who's involved with it. You know, but one thing about it is that some of these artists have to understand, you know, when you put stuff out there, you got to be ready for the smoke that comes with it. Now, either it's going to blow away or it's going to blow towards you.
Mm-hmm.
Either way,
like a prime example, and to build a point of what Eddie is saying, he's right about that, about the sensitivity factor. Think about this. If you do this as an experiment, you go on their account and you say anything good about them, they ain't gonna say nothing, but say something bad about them, or say something about their album, or say something about their, especially these women, especially if you say something about their edges or something, she gonna blow up the whole spot.
He's right about that.
I'm serious. Because, you know, I did it on a burner account just to experiment. And first time I'm saying this on the air, I'm first time I did that business. I did that to Nicki Minaj years back. I went on a burner account just to troll. She blew my shit all the way up. I was like, damn.
Yeah, it's serious.
Now, I ain't post my picture or nothing. I just went ahead. I just said something about her, you know, her weave or something like that. This is just to stand out. Next thing you know, about 5 minutes later, she loaded a whole clip of my ass. I'm like, the arms don't play, son.
Nah, you know, but that's the thing, you know, because, and it's not even so much journalists, because I tell people this too, you know. One thing about it's about being decent human beings to other people, because you don't have to like it, and that's okay, you know. But my thing is, if you really got a whole bunch of hours in your day to get up there and just purposefully torture somebody online, you know, a good ribbon is one thing. But when you deliberately get personal with people online and deliberately try to start shit, to me, that's uncalled.
That's the gossiping part. That's the gossiping part right there. That's like what Tasha K is going to be doing.
Yeah, and see what Tasha K does, that's low class. You know, that's low class, that's bush league.
Low vibrational.
Yeah, she does, and you know, because that's something where they really have no merit behind it other than they just want to fuck somebody's day up, which is really just, to me, the worst. You know, that says a lot more about a person trying to fuck someone's day up rather than the person who is trying to have a good day. And that's something where we have to get away from that, I believe, as journalists, especially as Black people. To have a communication in our community, we can articulate it without being hostile. You know, and some people say, and some people try to call it being comedy. I'm like, no. Harlem Nights and Coming to America and Trading Places, Spaceballs, Blazing Saddles, that's funny. Eddie Murphy's Raw and Delirious are funny. Deliberately trying to diss somebody and hurt their feelings is not funny. And it might get you killed depending on whose feelings you decide to step on. So I'm like, tread lightly.
Yeah, the trolling ain't no joke, man.
Yeah, facts. Facts.
Yeah.
We about to sign off shortly because I got to get going. I got to take care of some things. We only got 5 more minutes to spare. Hey, y'all there?
Yeah, we're here.
I thought my call that got dropped, man. I got paranoid a little bit. But yeah, man, it was a dope bill having you on. It's been a dope bill having you on, man, telling us about what you got going on and keeping that Oak Town sound funky and fresh. Let people know where they can find you at.
You can find me on Instagram at EDDI_PROJEX or EDDI_PENTHOUSE. That's my handles. 2 of them handles I mainly use, the Eddie Projects handle. But you know, I go back and forth. But yeah, y'all can tap in with me there on the IG, man. Keep up. And go subscribe to my Eddie Penthouse YouTube page. I got a few videos up there now, but I'm gonna start adding more shit up there daily. So y'all keep up with that too.
Eddie,
let you know too, bro, that we on the path to 600 episodes, man. That's gonna be a big celebration. So we gonna keep you in tune. You can call up and show us some love on that day. I'm gonna let you know in advance.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Do that, man. Most definitely, I'll tap in for sure.
Eddie, thank you so much. You're welcome back anytime. Much love and blessings to you and your family and continued success. Keep hustling like the Bay do. Get in that bank. Always, you know, keeping that top rank, man. Knock them out the box. We appreciate
man,
you. And you know, we'll be in touch, man. You know how to reach me. You know how to reach King. You know, we know how to reach each other, man. So once again, we appreciate your time, courtesy, gems, and most importantly, your wisdom and intelligence. Thank you again.
Thank you, my brother. I appreciate y'all. Peace and blessings.
Peace and blessings. King, take us out of here, brother.
All right. Much love.